Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and you are in for such a treat. Bookseller Sam joined me in interviewing Emily Henry about her new romance novel, Happy Place. This is Emily's third time on the podcast, and we had so much fun chatting about her new book, how her other characters are doing, movie rom-coms, and so much more. Sam and I both loved Happy Place so much, and we can't recommend it highly enough. Please enjoy our interview.
Hi, Emily Henry!
Hello, thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, we're so, so happy to have you.
Me too. I mean, I'm happy to be here. I wish I were here in person, but I'm happy to be here virtually too.
Someday. We'll get you here. We'll get you here one of these times. Most of our staff is like feral for your books. So like, we'll get you.
Cool. We'll make it happen.
Absolutely. I was gathering your books earlier and I was like, oh, we're sold out of Book Lovers. We're like down to one of Beach Read. We're down to one of people we met. Like,
Wow. That's a good problem.
It is the best problem to have. Okay, so we're here to talk about Happy Place. For the listeners who haven't gotten a chance to read it yet, give us the little elevator pitch. Tell us about Happy Place.
Yes. So Happy Place is about Harriet and Wynn, who have been together since they were in college about 8 years ago. And part of their relationship has been that every summer they go with their shared group of best friends to this family cottage on the coast of Maine. And it's their happy place. It's all six of their happy places. And this year, Harriet is planning to go on the trip without Wynn because they have secretly broken up and she's going to break the news to everyone else. Only when she gets there, Wynn is already there because it turns out that their friend's family is selling the cottage and this is going to be their very last trip like this. And it's this huge end of an era for all of them. And Wynn and Harriet decide that they cannot bear to break their friend's hearts this week. So they'll wait and they'll pretend they're still together and then they'll go home, go their separate ways and come clean in like a week or two, maybe.
This book. Whenever I'm hand selling it, I'm like, listen, you're going to get the happily ever after, but you got to earn it.
Yeah, you're going to work for it, unfortunately. Yes,
so
that's
many
very
emotions.
True.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I really didn't set out to write that book. Like, the premise was so silly and over the top and sounded so fun. And then the more that I got into it, it was like, well, I have to write about a couple who have loved each other for 8 years and found a significant enough fissure in their relationship to end it. And then like they have to work through all of those feelings to have the chance of getting back together. So it like, I do think it's like an overall joyful book, but I think that there is much more of like a melancholy tone and, you know, the title is more of like a sort of wink at what the book is really about. Like, you know, it's about the places that we go back to and the people we go back to when we need to be returned to ourselves.
Yeah. What is your happy place?
I mean, honestly, one really significant thing I realized in starting to talk about this book is that even though I have like physical happy places that I love going to, which I would say Lake Michigan, the first answer that usually comes to my mind is actually home. And I think that is so special and probably like rarer than it should be. Like, I feel so lucky that I just love being at home. Like, I don't know. I mean, and that's so much what the book is about is like, you know, they have these happy places that are sort of outside of their daily lives that they look forward to going to all year long. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, if that's the case, if you're living 51 weeks a year just for that 1 week, you're not really like getting as much joy in your life as I think that you deserve. And so I feel really, 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 really grateful and unbelievably lucky to truly feel that being in my own home is like a happy, peaceful, joyful place.
I love that.
It's my wish for everyone is that you love being at home as much as I do.
I love that. I also love, we were talking earlier about how, because we're in New England and we were so delighted that there's like Vermont and Maine, like it's a very New England book and we're just like, oh, yay.
Even Wynn's name. And there's a Wyndham, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. I mean, I really like, so I have just been like a New England admirer from afar. Like, I had been through Vermont once. I went to Stowe and maybe some other towns, but I hadn't really spent the time there that I wanted to. And so fully this book was an excuse to like take a research trip. And so I have no regrets about that. I will be going back.
That is
Yeah.
amazing. Come back
Yeah.
anytime. You are so
Stop
welcome
by
here.
here.
Come say
Yeah, I will.
hi.
Yeah.
Thinking about the characters in this book and the different relationships, you know, you've got Harriet and Wynn, the main two, but then you've got Cleo and Kimmy, you've got Sabrina and Parth. Was there a character or relationship dynamic that was the easiest to write, and which was the hardest to write?
Ooh, that is such a good question. I think Kimmy and Cleo felt really easy to write because they're so diametrically opposite. And that's like a familiar dynamic, I feel like, in my friends' relationships. And I've also like written a couple like that before in people we meet on vacation. So the idea of someone who's just like steady and calm and cool and collected and just like, I don't know, introspective and reflective, all of that. That's totally Cleo. And then Kimmy is just like this little ball of energy and just a little freak. And I love her. But you know, Parth and Sabrina are not that dissimilar from like a Nora and Charlie, where they're very, very similar and they have the same job and like, you know, are New York City people. So luckily, I don't think anyone maybe actually was as hard to write as Harriet and Wynn, just because I was just hammering out their story, draft at a time, like getting closer and closer to feeling like I understood them. But I think because the others were more like traditional kind of pairings than I've written before, it was maybe a little bit easier.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah, it must have been really hard to like, 'cause did you write it chronologically? Did you write like the getting together chapters first and then the Brit? Like what was the
I
like?
wrote it. Like, I think, like, you know, not exactly in the order that it happens in the book, but more or less in that order. The structure changed. Like, originally there were no happy place sections. There were just flashbacks tucked into the story, and it was a chaotic, horrible mess. And I was so happy when we changed the title to Happy Place, because when I pitched it, I was like, I know how I can fix the book. And it kind of hinges on this being the title for it. So when we named it Happy Place, everything kind of fell into place. But because I really love writing for the same reasons I love reading, so much of what I'm getting out of it is like learning the story and being surprised. And so that was the same thing that kind of happened with People We Meet on Vacation, which was my only other book that I've written with like dual timelines, where you're kind of learning what happened pocketed through what's happening now. And I really enjoy writing that way, because you're kind of setting up two little mysteries for yourself and the reader. You're like, what happened between them and what's going to happen between them? And it's like, whenever you kind of get stuck on one timeline, you can kind of like jolt back to the other, and it keeps the momentum going. So it really works as like a writing trick, I think.
I love that. Yeah, I love that format.
Me too, big fan.
Sam, you caught a reference that
Yeah.
I did not catch the first time.
So in the bookstore, they mention what is implied to be January in Gus's book, and that it didn't get
Yeah.
great reviews. Are they okay? Because I'm
Oh
worried.
yeah, they're okay. No,
Okay. I
they're
was like,
doing great. Their book just, yeah, I think the thing for that is, all right, I'm gonna expose myself a little bit here.
ready.
So my publicists send me my reviews, and they'll always quote like their favorite part from them and be like, this part was really great. And so it's like, I know kind of what to expect before I read it. And I've only ever gotten one trade review where they were like, this review came in, and I'll warn you, it's a little bit cranky. And I was like, okay, I'm just not going to read it, because
Yeah.
I don't need that. I don't need that in my life. But I thought it was really funny and cute that my publicist referred to it as cranky. And so it kind of delighted me, because I didn't read it. And like, you know, it wasn't like the only review I got, which is always so gutting when you're like, the one thing that anyone said was like not positive. But that, so I think that was for book lovers. And so then for this one, when it occurred to me that they were at a bookstore, I was like, oh my gosh, January and Gus would totally get so excited about writing something together.
Yeah.
And then people would not get it at all because, you know, they, what they write is so different. And, and no one would be happy, like, except for them. They would love it, but their fans, like her fans probably wouldn't be happy and his fans wouldn't be happy. And I liked the idea of them doing that together. And I also really liked the idea of somebody reading a cranky review and being like, oh, I've got to see what's going on here. Cause I'm that way. Like when you hear about something, when everybody like hates something so much, you're like, I have got to see.
Yeah.
The deal is here. And like a lot of times if people feel that strongly about it, I'll end up being like, wow, I had a great time. Like my one of my good friends, who Brittany Cavallero, who I co-wrote Hello Girls with, she and I have a thing about how like your favorite book will, or our favorite book will always be like a 3.3 on Goodreads because it's just so divisive to people.
Yeah.
But it, you know, like, I don't know. It's like, and my books largely are not that, but as a reader, a lot of times when I love a book, I go straight to Goodreads and I'm like, oh, a 3.3. Okay. Yeah. I guess I get it, but I loved it.
Yeah. Yes. I have a friend who always says that, if everybody loved the same things, the world would be a boring place. So I'm like,
that's so true. I mean, there would be very few things. There'd be so few things happening. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be very boring. Jumping off of the bookstore scene, I feel like your books always have some piece of the publishing world in them, mm-hmm. whether it's a bookstore or an editor or whatever. And I'm curious, if you had a different job in the publishing world other than author, what would you like to do?
I had a different job in publishing. Oh my gosh, none of it. I mean, truly, like, I think editing... No, it all sounds like too much pressure, too hard. Like, I think that's why I'm so grateful for the fact that I have this team, is I'm like constantly aware that I would be so bad at any one of their jobs. And like, I think about like being a copy editor and I'm like, that is my personal hell.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful that there are copy editors out there. And I really hope that they like their jobs. I really hope that it's not just like, well, I'm good at this, so I have to do it. I don't know if they like their jobs because I don't think I personally know any copy editors, but I hope that they love them because we need them so direly. And I want them to chase their joy, but I want it to also mean that my book will not have like a million repeated words and typos.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just last week talking to Alexandra Bracken, and she briefly worked as an editorial assistant, and she was like,
that.
It was not for me, fam.
Yeah, I mean, and also I think when you're like pursuing publishing, a lot of times you kind of trip sideways into writing adjacent jobs or writing jobs that are not like writing fiction or whatever. And it's like the worst thing you can do. But I do think, you know, like a lot of booksellers are like writers as well. And I think that works because you're just like surrounded by other people's books and you're like recommending things and like supporting other writers and just kind of surrounded by inspiration. But I think beyond like bookselling and like maybe being a librarian, I'm like, just stay away from book related jobs if you want to write, because it will just suck all of the energy out of you.
Yeah,
that is so valid. Yeah. That is so valid. Sam, you had this amazing theory that I'm obsessed with.
So I'm not sure if I'm assuming you're a big romantic comedy fan, as in movies.
Yes.
And I've kind of like seen some DNA of the movies in your book.
Yeah.
And I've kind of equated a movie with each book, and I want to throw it at you to see. So the first Beach Read is a little harder. I Pride and Prejudice was my like grumpy.
Yeah,
guy
yeah,
who
totally.
Actually liked her the
totally.
Whole time. I mean, when
and even the Pride and Prejudice element of it, like the Pride and Prejudice element is totally there. It's like, yes, very much so.
Yeah. Then People We Meet on Vacation is very much When Harry Met Sally. You know, the timing's never right, but they're all clearly into each other.
Yeah.
Book lovers, Nora Ephron. All of it, but like, You've Got Mail, like, is what I felt like the
totally,
you know, not quite the yeah. weird manipulation, but like the like you know, enemies to lover, yeah, work in the same business,
yeah, and the bookishness. And honestly, part of that was I was thinking of Parker Posey's character in Mail, yeah. because she's just sort of like this like a hard ass editor weirdo, and yeah, but it, and like the love letter to New York, yes, very yes, much yes. for me that felt like a love letter to You've Got Mail, even though it's not like based on You've Got Mail.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I felt like the vibes.
Yeah,
the vibes are there.
Yeah,
and then for Happy Place was a little tougher because there's not a lot of good like fake dating. That's a hard trope. I thought you did a great job, but like that's a hard trope.
Thank
to,
you.
Like, to make feel real. And this may be a stretch, but His Girl Friday is kind of like, and like the characters' main names are Walter and Hildy, and you're Wynn and Harriet.
Yeah. Yeah. Is just, His Girl Friday, so that's the one where she is she his ex-wife in that or no?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And she, and she's about to get remarried, and she's also like his star reporter or like star something. And he's like, no, you absolutely cannot get married. So it wasn't specifically that. Yeah. But it was comedies of remarriage were the starting point. So it was also specifically that. It was just sort of the blanket of that whole thing that was really popular in the 40s, which I didn't know until later. The reason that that happened was because the like morality codes of the time made it so like you couldn't portray any kind of infidelity in like a positive light. And so what they would do is they would have like a couple who had been married, and then they'd have them get all the way like fully divorced, and then have them like kind of dating other people or trying to get married to other people or whatever, and then like bring them back together. And it was like a sneaky way of going around the morality code of the time. So that was something I was loving watching. And that was one of the most significant ways that Happy Place started. Yeah. So it also,
Yeah, like for Philadelphia sure. story too, just without the Jimmy Stewart character.
Yeah.
I was so mad she didn't have Jimmy Stewart in that movie. I was enraged.
Same.
I was like, they're setting it
same.
Up.
Same, I think.
Time. And then Cary Grant.
I know. And then he just like, and Jimmy Stewart just like marries his coworker because she has a crush on him, kind of like.
There.
Yeah. It just, yeah, like, it's so strange. I think it's really interesting because I also think that Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart are like prime examples of like the two different kinds of hot, where you're just like Cary Grant is just like a hot guy, he's just a hot handsome guy, and then Jimmy Stewart, you're like, you have unbelievable charisma, and I'm sorry, but he's hotter than Cary Grant because of that. It's just like you can't really get on board with Cary Grant when Jimmy Stewart's there being Jimmy Stewart.
They had great chemistry, and also Cary Grant doesn't get her in the beginning. It's a very 40s thing where he like pushes her.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh, he's our hero. Like,
right.
It's just wild.
Yeah, they're like, it's funny. It's funny.
Yeah. The whole time there's a little girl.
I think I blocked that out. So much of loving what she do? What's the little girl?
A little girl the whole time's like, I heard she hit him. Like he hit her. Like the whole time, like the little sister. This is always like, but like maybe it's kind of like a sexy thing. Like it's kind of like this, like
They're kind of like he stood up to her.
Yeah,
he
stood
up to her, and you're like she weighs 45 pounds. He probably shouldn't have thrown her to the ground.
yeah. And there's like a whole third fiance. Like it's just that's a bananas movie. Time. I loved it, but I was just enraged that the whole time be like, not Jimmy.
Yeah,
there's. Anyways, yeah, I love those movies.
It's one of those things that's like so physically painful. Like I actually still have not seen the new adaptation, it's years old now, of Little Women, because I have such a hard time emotionally watching Little Women and getting to the end and being like my preteen self just cannot accept any ending other than Lori with Joe.
I understand that completely.
Completely. Yeah. Amazing. Well, yes. I'm so glad we got to.
Yeah, it's all I've been talking about. In. Just texting Ryan, being like, "This is my theories." Yeah.
No, you're dead on. Amazing. No, you're actually correct. I'm not just saying that. Like, it really those are my own thoughts about it. And even I think when I was doing press for Book Lovers, maybe I was like trying to explain like, it's not like the You've Got Mail of it all, where it's like, it's not as closely modeled in the way that When Harry Met Sally is, but it feels like I'm trying to take all of the tones of that And you know, there's like the dead mom who's like really significant and having to like move on from that. There's like so many elements that were kind of pulled from You've Got Mail for that one.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, that's right. Dead mom, yeah.
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 Okay. Also, I just had two things that I just want to like throw at you because I was writing these like hilarious notes as I was rereading it. So first of all, I also remember The Weakest Link having trapdoors. That is
Thank
cemented
you.
In my brain. I
Thank
remember
you.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye. And then they would go shoop.
Goodbye. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember
It's
this.
So baffling. And then there was like, when you dig into it, there's like, oh no, there is this other show, but you're like, but that's not a show I've ever heard of. And I have, yeah, so strange.
I even double checked because I was like, well, I know that there was a Doctor Who episode that like played on The Weakest Link. And I was like, maybe that's what it's from. But no,
maybe
they're
it was in
vaporized.
that.
They're vaporized in that. So I was like, it's not that
Wait,
one.
but if they were vaporized in that, that seems like that was playing on the trapdoor, don't
Yeah.
you think?
Exactly, right? Yeah. It seems like that was, yeah.
Maybe that's corrosive.
Because I watched a clip
that
last
is
night
baffling.
where they just like, they turn the light off and the person walks away. And I was like, no. That's not. No.
Yeah, you're like, this is wrong. This
is
wrong.
Wrong.
I'm in the wrong universe and I need to go back, even though that's the only thing that's different.
Yeah. So I had to throw that out there because I was cackling.
Thank
last
you.
Night.
I
I was like, no, I
appreciate
remember
that.
this.
Yeah, I really do appreciate that.
Yeah. And then as a girl named Ryan, I just had to say, I love Michael. I love
Oh
his
my
sister,
gosh.
Michael.
Good. You know what? It's funny is I initially like had some big explanation in there about how her name was so right for her and blah blah blah, and it was kind of justifying her name being Michael. And then my editor was like, I know multiple girls named Michael, I don't think you need that. And then like yesterday or 2 days ago I got a comment on Instagram that was just, why is his sister's name Michael? And I was like, I knew that these would be the two realities that people lived in, where I do feel like maybe it's more of a New England thing to like, I don't know. I don't know. It's certainly not a very Ohio thing to have
the East Coast
kids.
Thing.
Yeah. It seems like it's, or coastal maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe
coastal. And just the middle of the country is like girl name, boy name. But yeah, she was like, I don't think this is weird at all. I know multiple Michaels. And I was like, okay.
I love it. It made me so happy. I was like, yes.
It's so good too. I feel like as I get older, the more that it's like, I love that. Like, I love that way of naming. It's like, yeah, who can, like, you get to do whatever you want.
Absolutely. Yeah. Names don't need a gender. They're just names.
Yeah, exactly.
That's incredible. What are you working on next? Can you talk about it at all?
Yeah. I mean, not really. I do have another book that's supposed to come out next summer, and it is romantic comedy again, and I felt like, as of a couple days ago, I felt like, oh, this is my most straightforward true romantic comedy yet, but I feel like it's like morphing now, and I'm like, okay, so it's still, you know, it will feel like comparable to all of my books, but the way that there's like usually something else kind of going on too, that something else is pushing forward more than I anticipated. But I think it's genuinely funny. Like, I feel like this one, the happy place thing, is like a little bit like winky, where it's like the book is joyful, I believe, and it's funny, but it's also melancholy. And this new one, I feel like, is not as melancholy, and is, so far, could change. Don't hold me to it. But it feels like much more just like a funny, fun time.
Awesome.
I love that.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm already excited.
Sign me up.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
We're the first ones. You're just...
Yeah, I'll just mail it right to you, and we'll call it a day. Then you guys can fix it. Actually, then I don't have to see that.
We'll be your editors. Yeah. Now.
Thank you.
And then I always love to ask our guests if there's anything you've read recently that you want to recommend.
I am reading two things right now that are both good and very different. One is Taylor Adams' The Last Word, which is like a thriller, and started out very terrifying to me personally. I was so scared. And then the second night I was like, I'm going to keep reading this. And I think because I was braced for it, it wasn't scaring me as bad, but very good so far. And then I also just started Laura Henkin's The Daydreams, which is fantastic so far. And I love her writing so much, and I'm just a huge fan. And this one is like about the cast of a teen show from the early 2000s, and they're reuniting for a reunion episode, and all of their secrets are about to come to light, and I'm just like very much along for the ride.
I feel like I grabbed that arc. I feel like I have that.
You'll have to read it and tell me.
It's got such a good cover. It's got an incredible cover. It's like a black and white ish photo of like a looks like a paparazzi photo, and like neon the daydreams. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that does. Yeah, that does sound familiar. Yeah. Actually, that cover sounds familiar. Awesome. Well, Emily, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. We are so deeply obsessed with Happy Place.
Oh, thank
books.
You.
And we are just so delighted that you came and hung out with us.
It's a dream.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, we'll do it again someday in person. It was really great to just hang out with you all long distance.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Huge thanks again to Emily Henry for joining us on the podcast. Happy Place is available now from Gibson's Bookstore. A quick reminder about our partnership with Libre FM. If you use the code LAYDOWN at checkout, you can get 2 audiobook credits for the price of 1. So head on over to Libro.fm/Gibson's Bookstore to snag that deal. We love them. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of the books we talked about in this episode, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and all of those links will be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye!